It's Friday, and that's another edition of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. I'm John. You are
Jeremy.
Yeah, I knew that. And we're going to talk about some stuff that's hot off the press.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to tentatively title this the Senate Democrats, the good Lord giveth and the good Lord taketh away, all in one week. So the week begins with a monumental victory for the Democrats, right, in Georgia. Senator Raphael Warnock wins. And, you know, depending on your point of view, it was a close race. Herschel Walker did well, almost 49% of the vote. But the fact of the matter is that Warnock prevailed, and that meant for Democrats breathing room.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of it, the Senate being 50-50, it was now going to be 51-49, which meant technically they could here and there give up a seat. You know, notably Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, Joe Manchin from West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens overnight? I turned television on at 6:30, and the first thing I saw was that Senator Sinema announced that she has registered as an independent mm-hmm. in Arizona, that she's leaving the Democratic Party. Unlike the other two independents in the Senate, Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Angus King of Maine, she will not caucus with the Democrats. So the Senate now is 50 Democrats, 49 Republicans, and one independent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I listened to the brief interview that she had with Jake Tapper, and then I started thinking about Senator Sinema. She has been independent right along.
Yeah.
You know, she is in no way can she have been said to have been in the back pocket of Biden.
Yeah.
But I also thought about Arizona. You know your history as well. Barry Goldwater, right?
Yep.
John McCain, Jeff Flake. Arizona is an independent state.
Yeah.
You know, it's not simply an independent state. It's a iconic independent state, iconoclastic independent state. And in terms of its numbers, it's a 50-50 state. So as you know, and you have defined in this last cycle, independents are the swing. So now you're Kyrsten Sinema, and you are inclined to be an independent anyway, but you're looking at your state and you're saying, well, the Democratic Party in the state hates my guts anyway, because mm-hmm. I haven't been with Joe Biden necessarily all the time. I'm reading the mood of the voters in this state, and I'm also saying when I run for re-election, Democrats are probably going to put somebody else against me. Where do I get votes from?
Mm-hmm.
I get votes from crossover Republicans who do not like, say, somebody like Kerry Lake
mm-hmm.
or Blake Masters, and then I get votes from independents as well. So for her, it makes an enormous amount of sense. And I think as well, the leverage that she has now is enormous. Because
mm-hmm.
she's one of the few, if only, now immediately past present Democrats, who actually talks to, has a relationship with Mitch McConnell
mm-hmm.
and with Kevin McCarthy. Is this the wave of the future? Is this something you've been talking about this, but do you think we may see some other independent-minded Democrats, both in Congress and as candidates, saying, "Look, I'm independent.
Yeah,
I'm not partisan."
I think so, and from the Republicans, you've already seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm becoming more and more convinced that we are amidst a real political alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And there is both some organic it's an organic nature, and in response to, I think institutions like our national media, I think Washington, D.C., and it's a very fascinating thing to watch. So, I mean, really, the headline is score one for team independence.
Yes.
I think you're right in your assessment that cinema was saw this in a very calculated way.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a byproduct of what she did, the country benefits. And we don't have a middle, and we don't have to mean a true philosophical middle of, Aristotelian, you know, golden mean type whatever it is, finding that exact middle between the two. Not necessarily that, just a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
They used to call it a third way.
The third way. Because the problem is, right, I read this term the other day. We are in a post-persuasion society where the mainstream takes up with their party, where they take up with their narrative, and they just completely shun away any debate. Walk away from it, pretend another debate doesn't exist, and when confronted, label it something like it's conspiracy. So it shuts down all debate. And we're actually learning that social media played a huge role in this. And you know, the Twitter files that came out reveal something interesting. By and large, that was done by the Democratic Party, but the Twitter files also reveal the Trump administration had made overtures to the high levels at Twitter to say, get that tweet off of, get it out of there. And they responded.
Mm-hmm.
So we have political parties working in tandem with powerful extensions of the media, basically fusing a Ford a fourth branch and three branches together. And so I think you're going to see more of this, like what Kristen Sinema did, that is a third way, a new way, a middle way, because this has gone too far.
So I wonder, I have not a clue, any inside information, but I wonder if it may come next from... another senator, one or two or five members of the House, both parties, or just in terms of candidates. And the reason why this is monumental, to repeat, is she's only one senator, but that's all it takes, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
She, you know, the old political science textbooks on American politics that I used to teach from used to do a map of the United States in terms of political clout. And there was a giant New Hampshire and a giant Iowa and South Carolina. And California was about this big because that time, you know, the Democratic nominee and the Republican nominee were already
determined,
you know. So, you've got... She's the Statue of Liberty now.
And then as a response to that, and this happened a week too, and this is major, this has been done before. So it's not like what Biden is doing is monumental, but he's making the case that South Carolina should go first. And it's obvious why.
Yeah.
Because African-American voters are his go-to. He's always going to rely and try to appeal to African-American voters, and South Carolina is the best state to do that. But New Hampshire has made clear that they're going to go first no matter what. And so back to your question of, is it a senator, more senators that follow suit? Could be. I think, I've said this before, the Democratic Party is ripe for a reckoning. You have a solid anywhere from a quarter to a third of the base that generally questions a lot of the Democratic program. And I think what you could see is a wild card emerge within the party, not necessarily saying successful in getting the nomination, but at least in establishing openly a foot and a rift within the party, like the Republican Party has with DeSantis, MAGA, and the establishment.
So bringing it down to a different level, but the same dynamic. I just attended a meeting of a local candidate running for mayor of Utica. Now, neither of us live in Utica, so just, but, you know, a local candidate running in a Democratic primary. And so looking for advice, they asked me, what are among the things that need to be done? I said, well, you got to focus on becoming a smart city. And we can talk about that at another time. That's what 18 to 29 year olds want. They want a smart city. I had advised the candidate before, make sure whenever you leave the house that you have voter registration forms, because you need to be registering people and registering them as Democrats in order to win the Democratic primary. Campaign manager says to me, always carry them around. We cannot get young people, especially the ones that are friendly to us, to register as Democrats.
Yeah.
They will register gladly. They'll support us, but they won't register in that party. And that just underscores a lot of what we're saying. Now, for the candidate, that means much fewer potential votes from folks that are sympathetic to her.
Well, I guess I'll comment on the local side. That is the best advice that you could give for a strategy to get elected. I think the smart city is, I think that's an issue that would have, you know, an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah, I know that.
So be sure that in using that as your main platform, that that is going to invite attack against your main platform. It's a very divisive issue, especially when you dig into it.
Let's let that cat out of the bag, and then we'll get back to the original. I know the answer as to why smart cities are controversial, but why don't you say it, and let's just talk about it for a couple of minutes.
Why it is?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are perceptions that, especially post-COVID, and this is already going on, right? It's happening in Montana, where, a small town in Montana now has the newer smart traffic lights with 24/7 cameras and all kinds of data harvesting. So it that's what it is. It's also a new way of data harvesting.
Yes, it is.
And it just opens the door to a lot of scrutiny, and that's why I say it would cause an equal and opposite reaction at the community level. No doubt about it, it would make a very lively debate in this area. Now going back to the national. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, no. What I want to do is I want to talk about, so on balance, this week, then it was a turning point in that the Democrats won Georgia. Now they've won Georgia twice in 2 years. And significantly, Warnock's margin of about 100,000 votes was significantly more than Biden's margin in 2020 of about 13,000 votes. So it begs the question, is there an all-new Georgia here? By the same token, you know, what I had considered to be one of the burgeoning blue states was Arizona. And now Arizona appears to be muddled a bit, and maybe to be considered more of just a purple state. And so Senator Sinema is both following that independent streak tradition that they have, but at the same time, maybe with her finger on the pulse of Arizona, maybe better than anybody else by going this route. Okay. So now, was this a good week for Joe Biden? Now, I know that you have questions, but I think it was a great week. You know, I do the report card weekly for the Washington Examiner, and I have outlined my report card, which will be published Saturday in the Examiner, and I gave the president an A+. That's before cinema, but it doesn't change. But do you want to hear why it's an A+?
Sure.
Right, Warnock won.
Yeah.
Brittany Griner is home now, officially home. Gas prices are down and plummeting. Same-sex marriage, which was a pillar of legislative pieces for the Democrats, won and won with bipartisan support in both houses. And finally, at least Rasmussen, one poll, has Biden at 49%. And frankly, our polls often, more often than not, have tracked with Rasmussen more than some of the others. So I don't know, I think you have to just objectively, you have to pretty much hate Joe Biden to give him a bad mark. I mean, you've got to, you know, dig to find something to look for.
I agree that all of those things are positive for Joe Biden. What I would disagree with is that you have to dig. You don't really have to dig all that far. You just have to look away from the sleight of hand. Right? Focus on the other cups. If you follow the moving cup, then you can. And no, those are big wins.
Yes.
No question about it. But here are the at least three major issues for Biden. The Twitter files. This isn't conspiracy theory anymore. There is collusion between the White House, going back to Obama, apparently during Donald Trump, and now Joe Biden. And that's a big problem. The problem number two, of course, is Congress is issuing billions more, maybe record level, of aid for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And if we've learned anything from this past year, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. And then really the third thing, I mean, those are two big things right there. But I'll just leave it at that.
All right. What do you do about Ukraine? We've had this conversation before, but seriously. Now, look, we know that the president of Ukraine has some links. We know that in many ways he was not, probably still is not, a good guy. By the same token, what do you do when there is an invasion and a relentless invasion? We're seeing lots of people dying and having their lives destroyed and families destroyed. What do you do?
Well, you have to go back before what do you do. And you have to say, what do you do when you have a United States government that has precipitated the invasion, that knowingly and willingly created the condition to draw Russia into Ukraine to invade because of its activity in funding what Kiev was doing to the humanitarian disaster in the Donbas region on the Russian border. And then even, you know, I've talked about an influential paper called Unbalancing and Overextending Russia, written by the RAND Corporation, that said back in 2019, the strategy should be to provide lethal aid to Kiev to do just that, to unbalance and overextend Russia, which is really just another way of saying collapse Russia. And so that is the strategy. And so I think the question becomes obvious. Well, what do you do? Stop doing that. And then Russia...
And then Russia will withdraw?
Well, they will keep the Crimea, right? They're going to do that. They will integrate the Donbas region. But remember, they had agreed to ceasefires under two Minsk protocols. which Kiev broke two times. So yes, they would recede, they would keep Crimea, and they would take the Donbas, and there would have to be a partitioning of Ukraine. There would have to be diplomacy, there would have to be people brought to the table, but the United States is not talking about bringing key stakeholders to the table. They're talking about sending more aid, and we don't even know what's happening with this money. I mean, that's a whole other thing we can get into. I don't want to go down that road.
Well, one last thing,
yeah.
Okay? Predictably, there is criticism, mainly from Republicans, but also from progressives, that the Biden administration gave away the store by exchanging a weapons dealer slash murderer in exchange for Brittany Griner. And why didn't we hold out, you know, on behalf of another high-profile prisoner, Paul Whelan? Biden administration, of course, says we got the deal that we could get. It was either going to be one, Brittany Griner, or mm-hmm. nobody. We took the one. Who's right?
You know, I've thought about it a little bit, and I don't have an opinion on that. I don't know what should have been done in that situation.
So
I actually think that that's a story that should really be getting less play, but that's my opinion.
My opinion is Brittany Griner's home. Now start to work on Paul Whelan full time.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure they've been doing anyway, but that's another longer conversation, but Brittany Griner's home. Congratulations. Merry Christmas. And we'll be back next week.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Have a good week.
Yeah. Have a good week.
You too.